Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to the Motorcycle Men podcast. This is episode 436, and today I will be having a chat with Tom Oz Osborne, who writes the Ordinary Biker blog and hosts motorcycle tours, among other things, and he's here to tell us all about it. But first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Men podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, get on over to ScorpionUSA.com. And Wild Ass Seats. Now, you can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, get on over to wild-ass.com and get your cushion from the real Craig Johnson. And make sure you tell him that the Motorcycle Men podcast sent you over. And as always, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding jeans and California riding shirt. I'm wearing also the Roper gloves and some other things. And listen, it's great stuff, and you can't go wrong with it. I won't ride without this stuff. Your safety is worth it. So get over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. You can also buy this gear on the Motorcycle Men website at the shop page. Links in the show notes. All right, kids, time now for that chat with Oz. Hello, boys and girls, and we're back again. This is the Motorcycle Men podcast. I am Ted, your host, as always, and joining me today in the V-Twin Cafe here on episode 436 is, I guess we'll call you Oz. Is that what you want to be called?
That's what it's evolved to it's over the years. Yes, sir.
It's Tom Osborne, and Tom, yes, you do several thousand things, and we're going to get into that. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us who you are, what you do, and your motorcycle self?
Okay. Well, I'm currently retired after 36 years of public education. Yay. In Texas. Was going to try to go a couple more, but I'd had enough.
I understand.
And, grew up in Texas, lived there all of my life until January of 2024, where my wife and I have moved now to Tennessee, out away from some traffic and a lot nicer riding area. I started riding in 2004. I'd ridden a little bit on a friend's dirt bike when I was smaller, but seriously, in 2004, got my license and all that, and I was immediately hooked. And through life, I had opportunity to ride with a lot of people and do a lot of things, especially having summers off in the school system.
Yeah. And what are you riding right now?
An Indian Pursuit.
Ooh, look at you. Is that the one that's on your blog?
Yes, sir. The big blue one.
All
yes,
right.
Sir.
Yeah. Beautiful bike.
It is. It's a big beast. It rides well. I got it more for the comfort of my wife than for me.
Understood.
I had enjoyed the sports touring a little bit. Yeah. More, but at my age, I probably needed to slow down anyway.
So is that your only bike?
At this point, looking at getting something a little smaller, maybe a little bit of an adventure so I could hit some of the gravel roads around here.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of experience in that, but not enough to go real deep into it.
But you're in Tennessee, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Is there a lot of off-road stuff going on there?
There's a lot of gravel roads.
Oh, really?
That kind of thing. So, when I'm out riding, I could hit some gravel roads and see some countryside and hear banjos and stuff of that nature.
Have you inadvertently hit any gravel roads on your Indian?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It happens on here, and it happened in Colorado quite a bit.
It's like, oops.
Like that. Yep. But if it's too rough, I turn around. You know, if it's good gravel road, I can navigate that okay. But
yeah,
there's been some I've stopped and turned that thing around.
Yeah, it's like those street tires on a bike like that just are not suitable for gravel. That's for sure. No, not at all. So now you have your blog. Now, the name of your blog is Oz, the Ordinary Biker. Is that
Ordinary
what
Biker Oz? Yes.
The Ordinary Biker Oz, and. So tell us about your blog, and is there a specific point of focus with your articles?
I started in 2009, if I remember correctly, and I did it just kind of for fun and to hopefully provide some information. At that time, there weren't a lot of Facebook groups that I knew of that shared, you know, information for motorcyclists. At that time, it was a lot of forums and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But what really got me is reading articles where creative writing took place, and they would explain the sound of a motor as a, you know, a 100,000 bumblebees or something bizarre. I read one even recently where it talked about the brakes felt wooden. And as a writer, I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. I have no idea.
And so my idea was, I'm just an ordinary guy, and I'm going to try to write in a way that people could understand. So I just started writing about roads. I went to restaurants, shops, gear, various things like that. Occasionally I branched off. My dad was a World War II vet, and I support the vets, and I just appreciate them drastically.
Yeah.
So at times there's things about them, about going to memorials with my dad before he passed and stuff of that nature. But overall it's motorcycle related.
Okay. Now, is there any specific features, or what are some of the features on your blog?
I do have a page for the top seven that's been read. So as people have read them, I thought, well, that'll be interesting to let people know what other people are reading.
Sure.
I did for quite a while a trivia every Tuesday.
Oh, really?
Motorcycle trivia. So there's a page there with about 70 some odd little pieces of motorcycle trivia.
Yes.
Stuff that was interesting, a little less commonly known. And other than that, you know, it's mainly my articles. And then on one side, there's a list of other blogs that I read, and gotten to kind of know some of the authors through the internet only so far. And that I like their blog, so I just post them so people can see that.
Sure. Now, and you were telling me that you would read some of those other blogs and read. Did you notice that in other these articles that you would read, that many writers are slighted one way or another towards a specific brand or type of writing?
There's definitely some that are.
Yeah.
One of my favorite guys is actually from England, who we got connected because he was planning a trip and came and rode for about 3 months over here in the U.S.
Really?
Wow. It was his dream. His name's Gary France. And so his book that he ended up publishing was France in America.
Okay.
And so he came over, but he was from England. And he's a Harley guy. That's all he rides.
Yeah.
Harleys. And that was a big deal. He shipped his own Harley over and rode that. So he definitely has that slant. And then there's some that have done more adventure biking and things of that nature. And then there's some that are general, but a lot are just travel blogs with whatever bike they're on.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. I did notice that in the early years of the podcast, how many you'll see that in podcasts, and we'll talk about this later, but many podcasts are specific to a particular type of riding or particular type of motorcycle. Here on this podcast, that's not so much us. Everybody thinks we're all about Harleys, but we're about all kinds of motorcycles. But either way, aside from the blog, I see that you offer guided tours.
It started off with just friends. Like I said, I was hooked really quickly, and I took my first cross-country trip in 2005, about a year after I'd gotten my license, to see my in-laws at the time. Right. A different wife, and rode to Florida, and it just I just loved it. I loved getting out and doing that. And so the following year, with some friends, we did a 10-day trip up into Colorado.
Okay.
And my son was 9. He's on the back of the bike with us.
Oh, wow.
Right. And over the years it developed, and the guys, you know, at first we were sitting down with pen and paper, splitting up all the cost or whatever, and finally some of the guys just said, just tell us how much we owe you. just plan it and tell us. And I was the planner for the routes, the lodging, everything. Oh, wow.
So you did everything.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. That's kind of part of my organizational type A type stuff. I like doing it. And, you know, 95% of the time I was leading the rides.
Yeah.
And so it evolved through that. And with another friend, it just sort of took over and we started doing it. And then friends of friends have come along and been part of it. I always send the email about next year's ride will go to whoever came this year. And I give them first shot for about 2 weeks, and then I open it up to see, and then it's first come, first serve.
Oh, wow. How about that? All right. So, well, tell us about some of those locations that you would go to or the length of the rides, or both.
The longest one was, if I remember right, was right at 14 days, and we went to Yellowstone.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Now, through the years, it did develop because I was coming out of Central Texas, or not Central, North Texas, near Dallas. Riding out of Texas and back into Texas in June or July is miserable.
No, really.
It can be very hot, especially July when it's 105, but then the pavement's probably 125 or whatever. Yeah. And so after about four trips of riding, we started trailering out of Texas.
Really?
So when we went to Yellowstone, we trailered out of Texas. KOAs are great about letting you leave them for a little bit per day.
Really?
$3, you know, something like that. And then we would ride from there. And we found that we're also more fresh for the real good riding
instead of
the Texas Panhandle.
Right.
And on the way back after a week, you're in the truck with two or three guys, four guys, and you're talking about it and laughing and having fun on the way home.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so we've been there. We've been to South Dakota, to the Badlands, to the Black Hills. We've done that. We've done some Eastern New Mexico area, which is really nice. The Enchanted Circle is a big area. We've gone to the Tennessee, North Carolina state line and done the Tail of the Dragon a few times, the Chiricahua Skyway and things like that. We've gone up into Kentucky on a couple of times, Mammoth Cave and Civil War sites. And one year we did we stopped at Maker's Mark and did a distillery tour while we were there.
Oh, nice.
History and all, and that's pretty neat. So typically every year there's some sort of overriding theme, whether it's that year in Kentucky it was a battlefield, barrels and battlefields.
Oh, there you go.
Called it. And then we've gone to Southwest Colorado on a few times, and you know, trains and mines.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of history there.
Yeah.
And so typically now we take one day a week. We call it Excursion Day. It's kind of a day for if you're just doing
anything, right?
Yeah. You might want to rest. So we've done river rafting. We've done the train ride. We've done hikes. Some days four different groups are spreading out to do different things. And then individual may want to stay at the cabin or the house, because we have now developed it where we go somewhere and we typically stay there and station out of it, and I take care of breakfast and dinner.
Right.
And everybody's on their own when we're out riding for lunch.
Oh, so that's like your base point.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, how often do you do these rides?
Typically once a year.
Okay.
Now that I'm retired, I want to up that. I've done a couple of years where I've done 2 weeks. I remarried in 2018, and she enjoys going on these trips.
Okay.
And so she still works from home, but does a lot of publics, a lot of speaking nationally at home healthcare associations.
Right.
And so trying to coordinate that, I'd like to get up to two or three and maybe even some shorter ones. I'm so close to Barber Motorsports, and that museum down there is supposed to be amazing.
Yeah.
I'd like to plan, you know, a long weekend, take the scenic ride around there, go down there, spend a day, you know. So I'm working on getting it up.
Yeah.
Typically it's only been one.
Now, are you offering, can anybody sign up for these rides?
Yes, sir. They can. I don't have a website to do that. That's one of those things as now that I'm retired, trying to develop and get into. So typically, like I said, I send it out to whoever came this year.
Right.
And then from there, I send it out to people who've come in the past. And, you know, because we're normally dealing out of the house, you know, 12 to 14 is a good number. 1 year or a couple of years, I've had two houses where we had up to 20 people.
Wow, really?
That's a little harder. Yeah. But so I typically try to find good lodging, and then that kind of limits how many I want to take.
And then your meal, the meals are included in these tours that you do?
The lunch, lunch is not, but breakfast and dinner.
Wow, that's great. So you're expanding, and hopefully at some point you will have a sign up on a website. Well, you, I mean, you do have your blog website. Can't you like set it up on there?
I have that, and I have Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool. Now, not long ago, which is actually how this whole conversation actually originally started, you contacted me that you did a trip to Alaska as well with a group, but you did it differently than most people do it. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's kind of hard to, it started out just as me and a married couple. We're real good friends, and she had really wanted to go. I was single at the time, and he was kind of on the fence, and I just looked at her one day and said, if we plan it, he'll have to go. And so within a year and a half, we kind of planned it, but I invited another friend because of splitting lodging at times, and I thought, well, that'd be financially smart, and I knew this friend of mine, Scotty, had the kind of job he's been at long enough, he could take a good amount of time off. So he and I actually were gone about a month.
Wow.
But we went to the CMA, Christian Motorcycle Association, National Rally in MENA for a few days, and then we drove trailered to my sister's in Colorado Springs. And then from there, after a couple of days, we took off, and we actually went up into Wyoming, to Cody, Wyoming, and then over Beartooth Pass, and ended up going up to Glacier National Park. So we spent a week riding there. Kim and Danny, the married couple, they came up, but they were limited to basically 3 weeks in the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they jumped on their Harley and just rode as hard as they could interstate and met us in Cut Bank, Montana.
Right.
And so on July the 3rd, we took off and crossed into Canada and right west of Calgary, south, and then we turned west. We didn't want to go through Calgary, and went up through the Ice Fields Parkway.
Really?
Okay. Near Jasper, and snowed on us in July.
Oops.
Yep. Yeah, that was adventuresome.
Oh, did you say it was July and you got snowed on?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Up on the peaks, up on the big passes we went through, it was snowing. You know, it was raining. Lower elevation as we got higher, yeah. And it was sticking on the ground, but not on the pavement.
Right.
So we made it anyway. And then we ended up taking 3 weeks and a little more for the actual, once we left the U.S.
Right.
to go to Canada and then over to Alaska.
Wow. Now, did you go any further into Alaska? Did you go up further north, like into the Arctic Circle and all that?
No, we decided not to. When you research the road conditions, they can be pretty rough. Yeah. It's pretty barren. The truth is, in my mind, the only reason to go up there is to say you did.
Right. Yeah. I can.
You're not seeing these. I mean, it's vast and I'm sure amazing in its own way, but it's not like the same as being on the Rocky Mountains in Colorado or Canada or Alaska and just seeing that and glaciers.
Well, you know, Alaska is the biggest state in the country. It could be its own country for that matter.
Oh, definitely.
So as far as you went, was Jasper?
No. No. Once we got to Jasper, we headed west.
Okay.
And, you know, we end up going through Dawson Creek, a place called White House, and then we entered into Alaska at a town called Tok, T-O-K. And then from there, we spent the night there. And that's what's kind of interesting. The lodging was fun. We actually spent a night there in an RV.
Oh, really?
It was an Airbnb, but it was in an RV park, and it was stationary, and it was an RV.
Oh, nice. And,
we had the option of staying. Two of us could have stayed in the ambulance. They had an ambulance they had set up.
Oh, so it was like an Airbnb, but they had all kinds of vehicles you could stay in. Oh, that's pretty cool. I like that.
And then people could camp, tent.
Oh, wow.
Tent
okay.
camp and stuff like that, too. So it was kind of interesting. From Tok, though, we did continue further north and west to a place called Delta Junction.
Yeah, I see that.
And then at that point, you would head either straight north to Fairbanks, but we turned south. Because I knew that along that path, that road, There was a big pass, and then there was the Alaskan pipeline you could see.
Oh, okay.
And so I wanted to see that. And so we drove south at that point towards Glen Allen. We got to see that the Alaskan pipeline is amazing.
Really?
Just we got real close, and you're tiny compared to it. And this one pullout in particular had a bunch of informational plaques, you know, they put up for all us tourists and talked about it, the building of it, how it can move. If I remember correctly, 20 feet on rails side to side or up and down.
Really?
And not break because of all the seismic.
No kidding.
Action up there.
That's actually interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
It was really cool. And my 20 feet may be wrong, but it was something like that. It was a big amount that it could slide. So when you're there under it, you could see the rails that it could slide on.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then it would go underground at times and then pop back up on the other side of the road maybe. But it's an amazing feat, engineering feat, just crazy.
Oh, wow.
And to think that it really has not had a big major spill that I know of.
That's really super interesting. Wow. So you got to see that in Glen Allen, you said, which is very interesting.
Between Delta Junction and Glen Allen. And
okay.
I can't remember, that's Highway 2, I think.
Yeah, it looks like it's 4. Highway 1, actually. Highway 1, yeah, it comes out. 4 and then
like
1,
five.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Wow. Holy
and
crap.
Then we continue down to Palmer, which is just north of Anchorage. And we actually spent 3 nights there.
Okay.
We just reading things and hearing things, we didn't want to spend the night in Anchorage. It's a bigger city and stuff like that. Palmer was,
as far as it goes for far north, you know,
yes.
Arctic kind of
yes.
cities.
It definitely didn't look as modern as Dallas or some places.
Right.
That was real neat because we did drive up a little further northwest towards Denali. But we did not go all the way to the park.
Really? Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, okay. We went to Talkeetna, if I'm saying it right, which is a little town.
Yeah,
and
you could
see Denali. After reading the thing about going up to the Denali and all that, it is so tall in its area, it creates its own weather system, and
wow.
The number of days that it's actually clear viewing is very low.
Oh,
it's
no
like
kidding.
5%.
Wow.
Most of the time there's some kind of clouds and stuff, and you can't drive into the park. You have to ride their buses.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, so they got something. That's a restriction. That kind of stinks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they had too much traffic and all the wildlife and the tundra and stuff. They restrict a lot of that.
Right.
And so we decided it would be a very long day by the time we left Palmer, got there, rode the bus. It's a full day, and we just decided we would kind of do something different and see it from a distance, which luckily that day we did get to see.
Wow.
Weather. It was cool.
Yeah, it's it looks like it would be something really, really wonderful to see. Wow. So where'd you go to from there?
Like I said, we stayed there 3 days. One day was kind of a rest day, doing laundry and things. One of the guys, Danny, he has a son-in-law that's a police officer in Texas, and he likes the cop shows. His wife had pre-arranged, and he got to ride around with a Alaskan state trooper. That morning he got up early and went and had met this trooper, and he saw all sorts of stuff, including a chase and police, the whole bit. He got his money's worth on that one. But anyway, the day after that, so we're rested and we've done laundry and stuff like that, we rode down to Homer. So we went to the end of the highway. There's a big sign there. That's the lowest, furthest part of the U.S. interstate system or something to that effect.
Oh, no way. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Land's End Resort. Oh, yeah,
yes.
Land's End. Okay, wow.
And we spent the night there. Then we went back up towards Hope, which is a little bit over halfway towards Anchorage, out on not really a peninsula, but it's off the main road. It's a little bitty community that actually, when we were at the International Motorcycle Show that used to go around the U.S., there was a guy from Alaska that did trips. He had a whole tour group just in Alaska.
Right.
And he had a little presentation, and he told people they needed to visit Hope. So we visited Hope. And we also took a train up to one of the glaciers that day.
Oh, nice.
And it went up, and that was a full day, so we didn't get a lot of miles, but it was very interesting.
How was the road conditions up there?
You know, overall, I didn't think they were that bad.
Now, were they paved, or was it mostly dirt, gravel?
They're paved.
Oh, yeah.
The only time they were gravel is when they were working on them.
Oh, okay.
That's the only situation we ran into. And the funny story about that, the Canadians don't give you as much notice as Americans, road workers seem to. We would be riding, and we'd see a very small, not maybe a foot off the ground, small sign that had a motorcycle and what was supposed to be rocks underneath it, a bunch of rocks,
right,
showing you're about to go over gravel. By the time that all registered, you were on the gravel. I mean, it wasn't very far at all. It was, you'd be rolling around at your 60 miles an hour, 100 kilometers, because you're in Canada, and all of a sudden you hit the gravel. And there'd be some miles, but I don't know. I never felt it was much worse than if you've ridden in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado and New Mexico in that area. They have to work on them only in the summer also.
Yeah,
harsh winters.
Of course.
And so it's hard to go anywhere without some point you're going to hit some of that. Right. So I did not find it miserable at all. Bikes got dirty. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I bet.
You know, we never felt real bad about that.
Yeah. How was the weather, though, the entire time you were there? You were there for how long now in Alaska?
In actual Alaska, it was, I think, 8-9 days.
Wow. Okay. All right. Wow. How was the weather during that time?
We did get some rain, but it wasn't bad.
No snow?
It was normally light. No, the harshest rain, I can tell you, was at the end, leaving Canada. It was bad. No, you know, the first day it did snow on us and a little bit of rain when we went up through the Ice Fields Parkway. But we got rain at least a little, maybe 50% of the days.
Really?
Yeah, some.
Okay.
Now, what I did enjoy going through Alaska and most of Canada, I'm trying to remember if we had this situation in Canada, but in Alaska, if they were working on the road and they had it down to one lane, so they stop you for a while before they, you know, while they let the other direction come, they would wave all motorcycles to the front of that line.
Oh, there you go. That's pretty cool.
The people would, because they knew it's been wet, or, you know, normally they're wetting it down, how they do road construction stuff, and they wanted you to go and get out of the way.
Yeah, of course. Oh, we take up less room and can get through there faster. That's
yes,
it.
And that was really nice, because you don't get that in a lot of any other place I know of. They would actually, even the drivers would wave you up.
Wow. So how long was this entire trip from beginning to end?
For me, it was right at 25 days.
No, if I remember. Yeah, really. Now, as far as it goes for the planning of that trip, now, was that a group effort or was that all on you?
90% on me.
Yeah.
But I took it. There were a few things that they definitely wanted to do. We were staying, when we stayed in Palmer, two of the nights we stayed at an air bed and breakfast that was owned by other CMA members.
Okay.
That Kim had met at a rally at one point, and we got to go to their chapter meeting while we were there that night. We were the only one riding motorcycles because it was raining, but we didn't have an option. The rest of them did. But anyway, so I planned that. I had two couples that were good friends of mine that had gone 2 years earlier.
Right.
I talked to them, got a little bit of advice about that, and then I just started researching and you know, we researched even what border crossings to use, because when you go into Canada, I had heard horror stories, especially if they found out you were from Texas, because everybody thinks Texas people are toting weapons. Granted, three of us were, but so we researched that and passed at I can't remember the exact name, but it's north of Cutbank, Montana.
Okay.
We also, one of the guys, Scotty, contacted the Cutbank Police Department, and they allowed us to leave our handguns with them.
Okay.
So when we went to Canada, because the interesting thing, you can take a long gun, or a shotgun, or a rifle to Canada with the appropriate paperwork, because it's hunting, they'll let you.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
Lever action Winchester, old fashioned gunsmoke gun with him, because he was going to be camping out.
Right.
But they will not let you take a handgun.
Oh, wow. Did you have any interactions with wildlife while you were up there?
We saw a bunch. I don't know that I'd call it a little bit of interaction. We saw grizzly. Saw a grizzly eating a dead elk somebody must have hit beside the road. We later saw a couple of grizzlies with their cubs.
Yeah.
We saw some moose.
All right.
Canada has wood bison, which I had not heard of. They're like American bison, but okay, about 20 to 25% bigger.
Oh, geez.
And
I mean, they're big to start with.
I tell you, they were huge. We were going around the corner, and at this particular day, Scotty was leading. Just we'd switch it up some. He had the route, and I was the third back because there's only three backs going. And we go around the corner, and we see off to the left side of the road some dust. And you see hooves, and you realize this bison is rolling around in the dirt.
Yeah.
You get dusty, you keep flies off or whatever. And then it jumps up, and there's a big RV on that side of the road watching him. He runs in front of the RV, and he starts running across the road. And I really thought he was going to hit my friend Scott. Mm-hmm. He was pretty close. I don't know how close Scott was, but Scott was locking it down, and that bison ran in front of me, and it was huge.
Wow.
They were beautiful. And later on, we got to see a herd of them walking gingerly beside the road, and we stopped and kind of took some photos and things like that.
Yeah.
We never saw anything like wolf or fox or anything, but we did see some reindeer.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool.
So now the lodging, as you said, was it mostly Airbnb, or did you use vacation rentals by owner, or how did you do that?
I looked up all of them. I'd have to go back to look at my notes on which were Airbnb and which were vacation rental by owner. But most of them, I believe, were Airbnb.
Yeah.
And they're pretty easy to find.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a big book called Milestones, which gives you a mile by mile of the Alaskan Highway and what restaurants and stores and hotels are there. But they put it out annually because sometimes places close down.
Sure.
Well, it's, I don't know, $30-$40. My friend had it from 2 years ago. I used it as a base, but then I called, I researched, I looked online, and I would make sure they were going to be open. And then I'm one of these that I had it pretty much all booked probably by August or September, and we're not leaving until June, July. But then I called again in March and April
just to verify that they're still there.
I double confirmed that. And had all that, and it tells you how many miles between gas stations.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
Stop. So it's a worthwhile book. It's a little expensive, but it tells you all that. But nowadays with the internet, I think you can go online and find most of it.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, as far as it goes for your meals while you're up there, was that all home cooking when you were doing?
No, sir. Part of it, the early part when it was just Scotty and I, we did some camp cooking. We camped out some.
Mm-hmm.
While we were still in the U.S. But most time it was pretty simple breakfast. Some of the places furnished breakfast, some didn't. So that's always something to consider when you're looking. And then we just had to budget, and we ate out and we were careful. Some lunches were just snacks and stuff because we knew we were X number of miles away, and then we would eat a decent dinner before bed or something like that. I think we cooked one night when we stayed at the cabin in Palmer because we stayed there 3 nights. Two in the cabin, and I think if I remember correctly, we went shopping and we decided to cook at home one night.
Yeah, that's always good. A home cooked meal is always best. Yeah, you didn't do any actual camping, tent camping, did you?
Not in Canada or Alaska, but Scotty and I did in Wyoming and Idaho and Montana.
What did you use KOAs for those?
No, one night we did. KOA in West Glacier.
Mm-hmm.
Is the most beautiful KOA I've ever stayed at.
Wow.
It's gorgeous, huge, enormous.
Wow.
Thousands of people could stay there. It's really, really big. Some were just cabin or campgrounds that I found. Like I say, I did some searching, and Scotty brought a tent. I do a hammock.
Yeah, okay. So
I did the hammock camping, and so we did that. And even when we stayed at the KOA in West Glacier, the first night we got there, it was rainy, and they had one cabin for one night, and we said we'll take it for tonight. But then the second night we had to move over and camped out.
Well, once we
hit Canada, and I was a little more fearful of the potential of wildlife and extreme, a little more colder weather up in Canada, yeah, and Alaska. So we did, we stayed inside.
Inside is always good.
Yes.
Now, do you think a trip like this, because I hear people talking about an expense, but do you think a trip like this to Alaska is a lot easier or harder than people think?
I thought it was easier, but I like the planning. And even if it's harder, I can't express how amazing it was. I mean, we had some difficulty. Yes, we got snowed on. Scotty parked on the incline and left it in neutral, and it rolled forward and broke a mirror. He called Amazon, had it delivered somewhere, and we put it on. Later on, he had an electrical problem. He had an older Gold Wing that hit 100,000 on the trip, and it had a little electrical, and we fixed it, you know. But none of us look back and regret the trip.
Yeah.
No matter what, no matter how cold it might have got one day. And because there was one day my rain suit at the time started leaking. It was about three days till the end of the trip.
Right.
And we were still in Canada. And it was cold. And we stopped somewhere to get gas. And we went in for a while. And luckily, one of them had an extra thing that would be a little drier. And I used that for the rest of the trip. At this point, none of that matters. You know, it was just, I can't express it. It is so vast and so amazing, seeing the glaciers, the wildlife, the knowing you stop somewhere, you could yell, scream, shoot a gun, and nobody'd hear it. Because there's nobody there. It's just amazing. It's breathtaking.
Good. That's awesome. Now, well, I've asked this to other people before. Would you do it again?
In a heartbeat.
Oh, it's you. That's great.
In a heartbeat. What if I had... If I could arrange it, and who knows, maybe I can at some point, I would like to ride up and then take the cruise back.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
You can get on some there where they, you know, you got to pay for the vehicle.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have a place to sleep and then do the coastline back.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Would be ideal. Because in all this, I had another married couple friend who had, his name's Sid, he had taken a break from riding for a little while. They flew up to Anchorage. Got a rental car. They followed us for 3 days when we went down to Homer and Hope and went on the train ride and all that. And then they cruised back. They said it was absolutely amazing.
Did you have any problem? I've had others tell me that the flies and the mosquitoes were horrible.
They could be. We didn't have a lot of issue. We saw them, but when you're moving 50, 60 miles an hour most of the day.
Yeah, and you're not really camping out and hanging out out there in the tundra either, so.
Right. Yeah. But it was funny. We saw a bumper sticker that said something to the effect of, there's not a single mosquito in Alaska. They are all married and have large families.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. They were out there.
Now, aside from those touring and long distance stuff you're doing, you're also involved in other aspects of motorcycling as well. You want to expand on that for us?
You bet. One of the things I enjoy the most is being a track marshal. Growing up, I didn't watch motorcycle racing. I was a typical American boy, more involved in stick and ball sports.
Sure.
And small town Texas, football was a big deal. But anyway, once I got a sports tour, because I started off on cruisers and then I eventually got a sports tour in 2010, a friend of mine that I met through that would watch MotoGP, and we started going to watch at his house some, and then the crowd got big enough, we actually started hosting watch parties at a barbecue place that had a back room.
They would
reserve the back room, and you know, we could have 5 people or we could have 25 people. You know, we'd put it out there. But anyway, I found out that you could volunteer to be a track marshal at the MotoGP races down in Austin.
Yeah.
And so I went as a spectator my first year, and then in the third year, my son was going to be 18. He and I had the same birthday in February, and he was watching it with me. And so we decided to volunteer, and we went and volunteered as track marshals.
Okay.
And so they take care of you. You're right on the track. And after that, I was kind of hooked. And so I track marshaled 6 times for them and twice for Moto America when they were down in Austin.
Oh, really? What's involved in the track marshaling?
There's 3 basic jobs you could have. You could be a flagger, which means you're in a stand and you have headphones, and when they if you see a wreck, you put up the yellow quickly. If they tell you to put up the red, or, you know, if a bike is smoking, you put up the black and a number so that guy knows he's supposed to go in. You know, they give you all that training and information. You could be what they call rider assist, which is people that run out to help a down rider, but they're not necessarily medical. They'll help them. They'll be there. A medic, if it looks bad and he's still on the ground, medic shows up, and they might be the one, the rider assist might be the ones carrying him off on a stretcher if needed, or things like that. But that's one option. And then track marshaling officially is, if it wrecks, we run out there and we're picking up the bike as quickly as possible. If we can push it and restart it, fine. If not, get it off the track as quick as possible. You know, we've had a couple oil spills where the red flag came out, race stop, and we go out there with special stuff, and you sweep and you clean it up, you pick up road debris, et cetera, et cetera. Wow. And you get the races going as quickly as possible.
Wow. And how many do you, and now you're still doing this, right?
Yes, sir.
Ah, how many races a year do you do?
Just one or two.
Just
one for Moto America. One for MotoGP, because there's only one ran in the U.S. currently, and it's in Austin.
Okay.
There's talk and hope that the track that they're getting close to completing here in Tennessee will host them in the future, but we don't know that.
Okay.
Flat Rock Track or Motorsports or something. Anyway,
I gotta look
and then
the
I've
map.
Done two for Moto America. And so in those 2 years, I did two. One for MotoGP, one for Moto America. I'd like to do more in the, here in Tennessee. I'm closer because they run them in Georgia and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go do the Daytona 200. I had a friend go do that this year that had never done it until last year when I talked him into going to one. We're close enough to go to Ohio when they run up there. So I'd like to do a few more because they're fun. It's neat to see people, and it's
of course, the racing is fun.
Racing up close, you get a whole different respect for those guys.
I guess that must be a very long day.
It can be, yes.
Yeah, you start wee hours in the morning, probably.
Yes, sir. MotoGP especially, because that's international, and those guys are, that's high level. That's the F1 equivalent for motorcycles.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know they're million-dollar machines. They're very particular. Plus, I think the Europeans don't think Americans know what we're doing on motorcycle racing at times. But so we have to get there early. But when we get there, they feed us breakfast.
Yeah.
They provide drinks during the day, water and Gatorade and stuff. They bring food around, ice. You know, they take good care of you. Dinner, when it's over, normally they'll have some. One day they'll have a bunch of door prizes. And a couple of times there's been some of the racers come out and speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, just say thank you and talk a little bit and answer some questions. So there's some perks to it. You get, you know, a swag bag, a bunch of goodies at the end and stuff. it's more the pleasure getting to be there. I mean, there's no fence between you and them, and you know, and I've picked up a couple of, if you're into MotoGP, I picked up to a couple of famous guys' bikes and had a chance to chat with one while he was waiting for a ride back to the pits. And so it's pretty neat.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really great. That's cool. So what's next for Oz? What's going on?
Well, as we talked about earlier, I'd love to expand some of the trips.
Yeah.
Next year, I'm actually thinking of not working MotoGP, but going as a spectator, because I have some friends out here that have never ridden in the Texas Hill Country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of roads they call the Three Twisted Sisters.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah, and it's a neat area. I've ridden that, and so I'm thinking about making a week trip of that, go down early enough to do some of the riding and then hit the races on Saturday and Sunday and then come home. Then Jennifer and I got to plan what trip we might do next summer and things of that nature. And, you know, it's those kind of things. So I'm just doing that, and then I'm active with our local CMA chapter and do some things with them. And I have this dream of putting together a charity run for our veterans, probably go through the Gary Sinise Foundation.
There you go.
He has an amazing one. And so I've got a friend that he and I got to get together and talk about that, because he knows the people here. I've only been here a year and a half and could have a better idea of where we should do that and how to do it.
Okay.
Well, that's a dream of mine.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. So, hey, tell us about your YouTube channel.
That started off just pretty simple, and it still is for the most part. I just post some stuff from rides I do. You know, I don't always do all the famous ones. You know, people know the Tail of the Dragon or sure. what they call the Million Dollar Highway in Colorado. But sometimes I do these other roads that are less known, and so I'll try to video and post that.
Yeah,
I've done some gear review. Once again, my thing is I just want it for any old guy, whether they've been riding, you know, 1 month or 10 years, and hopefully they can get something good out of it.
You know, exactly. You know, sometimes too much is too much, you know, and less is more, you know.
Yes,
so
sir.
Just providing a little information that people might not know about. And that's pretty much the way I run my channel, but my channel kind of like yes. sucks a little bit, but hey, you know.
Well, I was going to say, but I didn't want to sound like I was kissing up.
No.
When listening to yours, it's not industry leaders that think they know way too much. And you know, I don't know. I think an ordinary person can listen to your channel and get a lot out of it. And that's what I wanted out of the blog and the YouTube channel.
All right. Yeah. How can people learn more about your blog and your guided tours and stuff like that?
The blog is Motor Oz, one word, motoroz.blogspot. Because that's the free one. I've not moved anything real professional. .com, it'll get there. So motoroz.blogspot.com. And then on YouTube, it's Ordinary Biker Oz.
Okay.
And if you actually search that and do a hashtag Ordinary Biker Oz, you'll see photos from previous trips that we've taken. Because when I have people post on Facebook or social media when they're on our trip, I try to get them to, you know, hashtag Ordinary Biker Oz or something like that.
Sure.
That way it's easy to find.
Right.
I can be contacted any of those ways. If anyone was interested, I'd love to actually, you know, you talk about what's ahead. If anybody said, hey, I want to do this and I've got 7 friends and they want to do this, I would gladly plan it, help organize it, get it approved by whoever. And
yeah,
I'd lead it if they wanted me to lead it, or I'd send them all the needed information. You know, I enjoy doing that kind of planning.
Oh, excellent. Good. Any closing words about your rides, your blog, and motorcycling in general?
Well, you know, I had one thought that hit me yesterday, and if I got time, I'll do this.
Sure, go ahead.
If anybody's planning to do a trip like Alaska or really anywhere,
right.
We didn't mention it, but in 2017, I went to Europe for the first time ever to be out of the U.S., and about a month, part of it was a World War II tour.
Oh, wow.
That a friend of mine and I designed. 4 friends met me and we did that because I wanted to see part of the area where my dad served and was shot and
sure.
all that. Anyway, but then when they went home, I stayed a week and rented a Beamer out of Milan.
Oh,
and
wow.
rode in Switzerland for 2 days and the Italian Alps for 5 days and then came home. And I'd never been out of the U.S. So my thing on any trip like this is do it. There's little you can regret about doing it. Even if you get wet, I lost my passport in the Alps. I had to go to the right place in Milan and tell them what happened. Anyway, I had to get a temporary passport to leave the country.
Wow.
But, you know, so what?
Yeah, it's part of the adventure, right?
So just do it. I'd recommend you plan early. Secure things early. I'm not one of these that says, let's just ride and when we get tired, we'll find a hotel. I'm not that guy. So I do plan and then confirm. Like I said earlier, I'd confirm numerous times, but allow yourself some time to soak it in. At one of your podcasts, you had a guy that I think he put over 700 miles a day on it, average something like that, going to Alaska from California or something like that. And I thought, that could be fun in a way, but when did you get a chance to soak in what you were seeing, what you were doing?
Yeah.
So I would always say plan it, but plan yourself some time to do some things. It's you know, especially if you only think you'll go once. I would recommend you learn a little bit of basic mechanical and electrical information about your specific bike and have a few tools. Scotty had some issues. I actually had a fork seal go, but I was able to get back to Colorado and then get it fixed. You know, but be able to do some things. If you're going to be gone very long, look, make sure if you're going to need an oil change or a tire change. Scotty had to get a tire, and it wasn't planned. He just realized it and luckily found a place. But you might want to consider those options.
All right.
You know, those kind of things. If you're going into Canada, research their signs and their laws. Realize you're going to kilometers, and they're much harsher on speeding than the U.S. we found out. Okay. Not personally, but we were told about it. I would research smaller border crossings. They're easier. We had absolutely no trouble. And at the time, I was riding a Honda VFR 1200 on one side because it has real pretty flowing fairing on both sides. One side had a U.S. flag wrap, and the other had a Texas wrap. And I really was worried that, okay, they're going to see the Texas. Now they're going to ask me to unload everything to make sure I'm not carrying some 45 revolver or something. But they didn't. I had no trouble. But we did go through smaller crossings each time. Make sure you have quality rain gear. Don't take too many clothes. Plan on washing. You know, buying an extra t-shirt along the way. Take as many videos and photos you can, because you can always delete them nowadays in the age of digital.
Yeah.
I took a bunch and I went through, and now they weren't worth a flip, but I took them. And then just check your bike before you go. Make sure it's all ready. Those are just some things I thought of that would be helpful to people if they're going to do it, and I would recommend doing it.
Yeah, that's it. Be prepared.
Yes, that's sir. It.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for being on the podcast. You've been an actual pleasure to speak with. And don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done. But thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
The Motorcycle Men Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be a part of something that actually makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Get on over to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will be in the show notes. And of course, the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those that left behind. All right, if you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Hey, thanks for joining me and Oz here in the V-Twin Cafe, where he told us all about his blog and his Alaska trip and a bunch of other stuff. Now, you can learn more about the Ordinary Biker by getting over to MotoOz at blogspot.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to get over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you would please also like and subscribe. That would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. New videos are coming, so please be patient. Hey, get a copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled. You can get it directly from me on the Motorcycle Men website now. You can save nearly $8. And, of course, it is still available on Amazon along with the audiobook. But you can still get it from me. And if you want, I'll even sign it for you. Hey, kids, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safe, kids.